It's time to break the silence and open up the dialogue around the topics of miscarriage and baby loss.
No more shame, no more taboo. Let's ditch it for the sake of our children.
The ones who are, the ones who will come.
And in memory of the ones who never came to be.
This is the Worst Girl Gang Ever podcast. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Worst Girl Gang Ever. Today we are joined in our virtual studio by Megan Campbell. Hello, Megan.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for coming
to the show.
Thank you.
We're so pleased to have you on because, you wrote to us a little while back, didn't you? Telling us a little bit about your story. And you've been through some awful crap and like you said in your email, this situation sounds like it's rare, but actually it's quite common, and you wanted to shed some light on it.
Yeah, so it's definitely something that I hadn't appreciated how common it was until actually quite significantly after everything had happened. Mm-hmm. Sort of very long story short, I ended up joining a fertility support group for the area that I live in quite a long time sort of after everything had happened on Facebook, and put a post on there, just was looking for a bit of advice. I think about four or five people in my local area wrote back and went, I've been through this as well. Mm. You're not the only one. And I think fertility issues, loss, miscarriage, all of it can feel really isolating, which is something that you guys are obviously great at making people feel much less alone. Mm. But I think from the perspective of what happened with me, I felt really alone because it felt like it was such an unusual scenario. And I kept being told by medical professionals, you know, this is really unusual. We don't normally see this, which probably sort of compounded those feelings a little bit.
Yeah.
And made it sort of feel even more like, well, there must be something wrong with me because I'm the only person ever that they've seen that's had this happen. So what's wrong with me? What's meant that this has happened to me? Sort of why me? I suppose a lot of loss comes into that sort of why me bracket, but sort of compounded that feeling.
Could you tell us a little bit about what did happen?
So me and my husband, one of those really annoying couples where we sort of tried once, got pregnant, really sort of lucky, I suppose, or then turned out not so lucky. Went for an early scan because I used to work in neonates. So I used to deal with a lot of premature babies, knew a little bit more than I suppose probably the average person about loss and miscarriage because I'd seen a lot of it. And from that, really wanted to go for an early scan for a bit of reassurance. So we had this lovely early scan at about 8 weeks, was told, oh, everything looks really good. You know, there's a heartbeat there. No reason for any concerns, didn't have any bleeding, anything like that. Went for our 12-week scan, which ended up being slightly late because of the area that we live in. The hospital was running behind with appointments. So I was nearly 14 weeks by the time we went for our 12-week scan. Got in for that appointment, sat down, everyone's going, oh, you know, it's all gonna be fine, you've not had any bleeding, anything like that. Went in for a scan and heard those horrible words. We're really sorry, we're not seeing what we're expecting to see. Had a pretty rough road with that because they said that things had stopped at about 8 weeks, so it must have been literally days after we'd been for that early scan. So because it had been so long, they were quite concerned about me either sort of having a natural management or a medical management. They were sort of quite keen to intervene quite quickly. So that scan was on the Thursday and I went in on the Saturday for a surgical management under local anaesthetic. So I was awake, which was definitely the right decision for me at that time. But it was none of it's a nice experience, I suppose. But that was pretty rough.
Why was it done under a local?
So they offered us both. They offered us a DNC under general and they offered us under local, but the local meant I could go home the same day. And I really didn't want to be on a maternity or gynae ward with people going through terminations for whatever reason or other loss. I kind of just wanted to be in my own space.
Yeah.
So I think for me, the big thing was wanting to sort of be in and out as quick as I possibly could, because it meant that I could deal with things in my own environment rather than being in that sort of clinical environment, given the fact that I'm a nurse is pretty terrible, really, isn't it? But just hated being in hospital for any stretch of time.
I think it makes complete sense. Why would you want to be there any longer than you need to be?
Exactly, exactly. So it was definitely a case of trying to get out of there as quick as humanly possible. Mm. So that was the Saturday. We actually ended up going to see my parents. They've got a holiday home, so we went to see them for a few days over there and just had a bit of a break with them, which was probably really good, because I think I would have just curled up in a duvet and tried to block the world out for weeks if I hadn't done that. So that was probably the best thing for me at that time. Sort of fast forward a little bit, so that was the January. It took me quite a long time for my cycles to come back after that. So we got to sort of end of March and nothing had really happened, and they said, oh, by 8 weeks everything will have gone back to normal. And ended up ringing the GP and felt quite fobbed off, I suppose, because they were like, oh, you know, yeah, we're not worried, if it's been 4 months then come back and see us, so effectively leave it even longer. And we're in this sort of place where desperately thinking about trying again, because we'd kind of got to the space where we were ready to do that and were sort of just waiting for things to go back and just not really any further forward.
Megan, did you can I just ask, did you have a regular cycle before that? Has your cycle ever been like to the day?
Fairly clockwork. Okay, yeah. I have quite long cycles, but they're pretty sort of consistent. I've never had any sort of concern. Well, they did some investigations a few years prior to that where they thought I might have endometriosis, but right. that all came back okay. So,
and why did they do that?
And there weren't any concerns about
what led you to...
I'd been having had sort of pain during sex for probably about 2 or 3 years. Again, took quite a long time to get to the point where they'd actually investigate anything, because they kept going, oh no, we'll do some swabs, and if there's no infection then we're not really all that worried. And it took a really good GP, who is now my sort of GP that I see quite regularly for anything, who was fantastic and was like, no, we need to do something about this. This has been going on for a really long time and we're not really getting any further forward. So I'm going to send you for a scan because I want to know that there's nothing else going on here. And that all came back okay. They sort of were quite happy that everything else looked normal. So they said, look, we're not concerned that there's anything going on here. We'll leave you. If you want to come back and chat about anything else, then obviously do so. But I mean, at the time it was like, okay, we're reassured that there's nothing obviously wrong. So kind of left it at that point. So my cycles took quite a long time to come back. I think it was the April that I sort of first got a period after it was the very beginning of January, and it was towards the very end of April. So it was coming up nearly 4 months for my cycles to actually come back to normal, which obviously you do start to worry. You think, oh, is there something wrong? Pregnancy test had been negative, like they'd asked me to do the 3 weeks afterwards. So they were saying, oh, there's nothing we can do. It's just a case of you've got to wait. Then found out in the May that I was pregnant again, which was obviously a really nice surprise, but then sort of tied in with all that really scary, what if something goes wrong again?
Yeah.
And this time round had quite a lot of pain and some bleeding, which was then even less reassuring. I ended up actually going into A&E early hours of a Sunday night into a Monday morning I was about 6 weeks, I think, at this point, to have, because I was concerned that I might have an ectopic because I had all this pain and this bleeding and it wasn't getting any better, it was getting worse. Went in, ended up sitting in A&E for hours, as you do. Ended up going up to see early pregnancy gynae, and they did a scan, said it was too early to see anything, so to come back. Went back a week later, and they found that I had an ectopic. So based on sort of advice by the hospital, what they'd said based on all they'd seen, they said, oh, we should probably just remove your tube, because the chances are if we try and remove part of your tube and just remove where the pregnancy is, then you probably would lose your tube anyway, so we'll remove your tube.
Megan, did your pain and bleeding continue in that week where you were
the whole time
to go back?
Yeah, the whole time, and very little. So no one was really that concerned, which I think probably made it even worse, because I was sitting there going, there must be something wrong, and no one seems all that worried about it, so why?
And I guess you're also in that limbo where you have a little bit of hope as well. So you think, yeah, everything must be going wrong, but people say that bleeding's normal and these pains could just be stretchy pains, and you sort of, you think it's doomed, but there's just that tiny bit of you that thinks, oh, it could all be okay.
It could just be okay, yeah. And especially we'd had blood tests done. So we had bloods when I went into A&E, and they got us to come back 2 days later, and they were like, if your HCG levels have doubled, we're not worried, because, you know, that's a really good sign. And they had. So we'd sort of been sat in this position of like, oh, it might be an ectopic, but actually it's probably not, because the blood tests are all showing that everything's progressing as it should be. So yeah, I mean, that was a huge knock, I think, for both of us. And I think the other element of that is, oh, you know, actually, if you lose a tube, then there is some loss in your fertility. So desperately wanting a baby and then being told, oh, you know, actually after this your chances of conceiving are going to drop because effectively there's less chance of it being possible, that was pretty hard to hear, especially having sort of already suffered with the loss prior to that, so it was sort of sitting on two losses within less than 6 months. And then we got to the month after, so the July, I thought I'd had a period and it wasn't.
So Megan, you had that tube out, that first tube?
Yeah, first tube out, lovely keyhole surgery, recovery time, everything else, started to sort of feel like myself again. So that was the end of May.
Did you know about the whole the fact that the tube can go and get the egg from the other side?
Yeah, so they did explain all of those things.
It's amazing.
It's so clever, so clever. So effectively, even with one tube, it can still access both of your ovaries, which is like the coolest thing ever, but so random. And they're sort of like, yeah, we don't really know how this works, but it does. It just does. I was like, okay, well, we'll roll with that.
I didn't know until when I was pregnant with my son, they said to me, I had the first scan and they said, we can see that he's come from the left ovary, this pregnancy's come from the left ovary. And I went, no, that's not possible. I haven't got a left tube. And they were like, Laura, you're a nurse, you should know this. And they told me and I was like, wow.
No, but why would you? It is this assumption that people have this knowledge, and like, why would you know that? How would you have any idea that that's a possibility without having been told it?
Isn't it mad though that all this, like, you know, we have this sort of the woke generation, and yet we don't have a fucking clue what's going on inside our own body. I found that really difficult part of losing a baby, the fact that I had no idea what to expect after I found out that the baby had died, and I'd had a miscarriage as well, and I didn't know what size it would be, and I was too afraid to ask because I felt like so ignorant. I just, you know, how can all this be going on beneath the surface, and I have no idea. I just found it really sort of humiliating, is probably too strong, but you know, a real,
it's embarrassing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is embarrassing. It's just like, how can I not know this about my own body when we sort of, you know, we're all womanly and great and amazing, and then who knew?
I've got no concept of what this is actually going to be like. And I also don't necessarily think, I mean, my experience, in as much as it's not exactly a positive experience, the staff were really lovely, who I had to deal with in that scenario. And they were sort of really, they would sort of explain things really well, and they were really sort of comforting, and they were as good as someone can be in that scenario. But even then, I remember being told when I left the hospital, oh, you'll get some mild cramping. I mean, I don't know anyone who would describe what I had as mild cramping. I obviously haven't had a living child and haven't been through labour, but the cramps I got after that procedure felt like contractions.
Yeah.
Oh, after your D&C or the ectopic?
Yeah, after it's called an MVA. So after that, I wouldn't exactly describe it as like cramping. I think I suffer with fairly uncomfortable periods, and that was like one period on steroids. Like it was like 1,000 times worse.
Yeah, that's a great description.
Yeah, it was just horrendous. So I found that I just wish they would just be honest and just say, this is going to be really awful.
I think though, because I didn't have that, I didn't have that pain. And I think the fact is they don't know, and everyone is so different. I mean, admittedly, I took every drug that they were offering me because what can I say? I like drugs. But I didn't really have that pain. And I think that they don't know, and it varies so much from person to person. But they need to tell you that you might have it, right? They need to say that that's a possibility. They need to say that you might bleed really, really heavily and soak. Because that was my thing. I thought I was dying. I lost so much blood so quickly that I genuinely thought something else has happened, something worse.
Something's fundamentally gone so wrong.
So wrong. Because I was they didn't say, oh, you know, don't wear nice clothes. Or, I mean, why would they say that? But, you know, I was wearing normal clothes when I got into the hospital and I was soaked up to my shoulder blades in blood. And I was like, I think I might be dying.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, mine was, oh my God, because they tell you before this procedure that there's a really small chance that they might perforate your uterus. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh my God, they've perforated my uterus. I'm going to die. I'm going to bleed to death. And I'm going to die because I'm in so much pain. This can't possibly be normal.
Mm.
And I mean, they were sort of obviously happy before they discharged me that everything looked okay. But that doesn't necessarily in that moment make you feel reassured because you're sitting there thinking, well, maybe they missed something, you know, it happens.
And we're so bloody English that we don't want to go, actually, no. Can you come back? Because I'm pretty sure I'm dying. And you've just waved me out. And I think you're going to be done for gross negligence if you do not read my notes again and sort me out. But yeah, I totally get it. It's a horrible feeling. But you don't want, and we're so English that we don't want to make a fuss. So we just go.
Exactly. I just left quietly, sort of like tail between my legs, thinking, okay, I'll just go home now. Because, you know, it's the best thing to do just to go home for like afterwards.
Yeah.
And like, you don't want to make a fuss. So you just go, oh, yeah, okay. If you've said everything's okay, I'll just take that as gospel and I'll just go.
Yeah. You're the ones with the training.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't understand gynae. It's not my area of expertise by any stretch. Mm. So I just sat there and went, okay, I'll just do as I'm told. See you later. Thanks very much.
Yeah. So what happened after your surgery then, after your ectopic?
So was expecting things to take a little while to go back to normal because of what had happened with the miscarriage. Got to sort of 6 weeks afterwards, which actually fell at a really awful time. It was my cousin's wedding, and had a bleed, which I kind of assumed at the time was my period coming back. And then the bleeding kind of stopped, or like tailed off enough that I thought it was coming to an end. And myself and my husband had kind of agreed that we would start sort of tracking my cycles again in the sort of July into the August, so that we had a rough idea of where things were going into the next month, and if we wanted to prevent then we could, or if we wanted to try then we could sort of discuss that nearer the time. Started doing my lovely clear blue digital ovulation tests with those flashy smiley faces, etc.
Those fucking, I'm so happy that I never have to see one of those fucking smiley,
I hate them. I hate them so much. That flashy smiley face, my friend and I nicknamed Karen because it was just the worst thing ever.
Yeah, we're not allowed to talk about Karens on this show, but yeah.
so we sort of started tracking. I was actually on my friend's hen do. It was on Sunday. We were heading back from the hen do. And the lines just looked really dark. And I was like, this doesn't look right for, you know, where it should be in my cycle. And I kind of knew in the back of my head that I'd read somewhere that if your ovulation tests are really dark, it could be a sign that you're pregnant, because sometimes HCG can show up on an ovulation test as looking like you're ovulating.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, well, like maybe I should just do a pregnancy test when I get home. Having like had a really heavy weekend drinking, because, you know, I was celebrating with my friend and wasn't sort of overly well, we weren't in a headspace where we were thinking about trying. And I was like, well, you know, while I've got the freedom to go and have some drinks and socialise with my friends, I want to sort of take advantage of that almost.
Yeah, of course.
Got home on the Sunday, which actually incidentally was our first wedding anniversary, and did this pregnancy test and it came back positive. And I was sitting there thinking, right, okay, that's not quite what we were expecting. So kind of took the bleeding that I'd had as being implantation bleeding. Had been told by the team at the hospital that if I, because of having had the previous ectopic, I needed to have an early scan. So to call them when I reckoned I was about 6 weeks and to go in for that early scan sometime between 6 and 7 weeks to see that everything was where it was supposed to be. So sort of worked out roughly using sort of Clear Blue digital tests by this point, because I was sitting there thinking I really don't know where anything is because I hadn't had a period to be able to work back to. And it was saying, oh, you're about 2 to 3 weeks or whatever it was at that point, which is obviously the equivalent of 4 to 5 weeks because it's based off your ovulation date rather than your period date. It's all very confusing, isn't it? Confusing. I don't think they make any of things simple. So rang them because I'd had a little bit more bleeding and was a bit worried and was like, well, you know, I had this last time and this was a sign that it was an ectopic, and was told, oh no, don't worry about it. Wait till you're at least 6 weeks. We don't want to see you before then. There's no point. And then it was the week before, on the Monday, before I was sort of booked in to go for this scan, I had this absolutely blinding pain down my left side, which was the side that I still had a tube, and was like, this is really worrying. But it went away. It only lasted for about 10 minutes and I felt fine afterwards. So I thought, oh, well, you know, could be anything. Maybe it was just wind, because, you know, you get sort of lots of bloating and stuff in pregnancy. It could be nothing. Went in for my scan the Monday after, and it was an evening scan. We went in at like 6 o'clock. They put the probe, that lovely transvaginal probe, in, and immediately the sonographer's face just changed. And you just know, don't you? Once you've had bad news on a scan, you just know that it's not good. And she was like, so it's definitely another ectopic. It looks like your tube's actually ruptured, because we can see quite a lot of fluid in your abdomen. So it looks like you're bleeding.
So that must have been that excruciating pain that you had.
Yeah. That wow. I'd sort of fobbed off, because I thought, oh, well, you know, it must be fine because it's gone away.
Wow.
So we got there at 6, had various people coming in to check me for things over the course of about an hour, then had a clearly not very confident registrar come in and tell us that they'd probably have to remove my tube because it had ruptured. So, you know, that meant that effectively I would have no tubes. And he was like, and, you know, based on the sort of criteria for where you live, I'm not sure you'll be eligible for IVF.
Wow.
So we're sitting there. I'm about to go into surgery where my husband's thinking that I might die. Because he's like, well, if you're bleeding internally, God knows what they're going to find. So he was really, really stressed, bless him, because he was thinking, I've potentially lost a third child, and also I might lose you in the same day. And then we're sort of being told that even if you're okay after this, we don't know if we're going to be able to have any support for starting a family, because the registrar wasn't very sure what the story was with that. So I bless him at this point, I'm hysterically crying, thinking, right, so that's it, that's motherhood, as a sort of like the door's closed. And I remember being sat in this room waiting to go down to theatre, and him holding me up while I hysterically bawled my eyes out, because I was sitting there thinking, well, how has this happened? How has so much happened in such a short space of time that we're now in a situation where we're potentially never going to have a family? And if we do have a family, how much is that going to cost us? Because we all know that IVF is not exactly a cheap process to go through. And who knows what state I'm going to be in if I do get out of this surgery okay. So that was pretty horrendous. I mean, I really feel for him. I'm not sure how he left the hospital at that point, because I don't actually know how that would feel to be the one having to sort of walk away. But effectively, I got wheeled down to theatre and went to sleep, and that was it. And yes, okay, it was really traumatic prior to all of that, but for me, once I was asleep, that was that, and I was sort of in the hands of the surgeons. And he had to just go home and wait to hear if I was okay, and go and get me some clothes and things, in the hope that when I got out of surgery, they would get a phone call saying, you know, everything's okay, she's all right. So I think that's probably, it's funny, it's something that we talk about, is I definitely find the miscarriage the most traumatizing in terms of sort of still now, if anything triggers me, it's much more to do with the miscarriage and that experience, and the sort of being told we're not seeing what we're expecting to see. Whereas for him, that second ectopic, he's still quite scarred by.
Yeah. Do you think seeing a heartbeat and then that being gone?
Yeah. I think that was the big thing for me, because I think I'd thought, you know, we've got to the point that there's a heartbeat, everything's got to be okay now. Whereas because I had the bleeding both times with the ectopics, I just thought, oh, there must be something wrong. And you do, as much as there's that little fragment of you going, it could be okay, early bleeding in pregnancy can be normal. I think in the back of my head, there was always that element of, there's just something not right here. So no tubes, which was pretty unpleasant. All the surgery recovery in such a short space of time, equally pretty unpleasant.
Were you, when you came around from the second ectopic, and obviously you had to come to terms with the fact that you no longer had any tubes, were you offered sort of counselling, fertility counselling or anything like that at that stage?
No, nothing. So the only time we've ever been offered any counselling was after the miscarriage, which I did take. Spoke to a really lovely lady sort of through the hospital, who was fantastic, but it's where we live, we're kind of between two hospitals. So the first time we were actually going to hospital that's slightly further away, because that was where I'd said that I wanted to have to sort of give birth, and that was where we'd been for the scan.
Yeah.
Whereas with the two ectopics, because our local hospital was a little bit closer, that was where we went, because that was where we'd been told to go. So two different hospitals in terms of the way that they manage things. Like the hospital that's closer to us doesn't offer any counselling, whereas the one that's slightly further away, they also gave us, I don't know if you've ever heard of the charity For Louis or For Lewis.
Yeah, it's like a four, isn't it, the number four?
Yeah. So they gave us a memory box from there. Offered us quite a lot of sort of additional support, so we're really good in terms of sort of counselling, you know, if you need this, then this is available. Whereas the hospital that's a little bit closer is not quite so good with stuff like that, from my experience anyway.
And has there been any follow-up, like with the GP or anything, in relation to support?
Yeah, the GP was great in terms of sorting out sick notes, time off work. Did say that if I wanted some counselling, it was there. And the counselling that I'd had, they did say that if I ever wanted to get back in touch, it was kind of like a bit of an open door policy. They would just take me back on whenever I needed it. And at points, both myself and my husband have done that. So Connor's had some support from that side of things as well. And I think actually probably needed it sooner than he maybe did it, but sort of typical man, was like burying his head in the sand that he thought he was okay and possibly wasn't. But I think in fairness for both of us, it was definitely something that was needed at different points. But yeah, so GP follow-up wise was fairly minimal, because then the day after my surgery, we were seen by the consultant, who said, no, you definitely are eligible for IVF in our area, because we're actually quite fortunate that where we live, they offer 3 rounds on the NHS.
Wow. Well,
that's good.
Which I know is pretty impressive compared to other parts of the UK where it's like none or one or partial.
The fact that you were told that, like, but then the, just before you went down to surgery, you were told that, oh, I don't think you might not be able to, you know, like, if you don't know, why say anything at all?
I don't know how I would feel about being told that I was going to be infertile and there was no plan or no
hope.
Yeah.
So you know, we're effectively going to make you infertile because we're going to remove your other tube. But actually, beyond that, we don't know whether you're actually eligible for any support, because this person clearly wasn't very sort of clued up on what was going on in the area in terms of what's available.
But it can't be that difficult to find out.
No. And I also almost think in that scenario, if you don't know, actually, I didn't need to know that at that point. It could have been a conversation for afterwards or the next day, or...
You've got no choice, right? You've got to have the tube out.
Yeah.
So actually...
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever the follow-up is going to be, you need to have...
Could
the
have waited.
So some reassurance.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll look at what is on offer and we'll give you all of the options, all of that sort
we'll
of stuff.
We'll discuss that with you afterwards. Yeah, agreed. It's just, it was just, I think, one of those things. Unfortunately, the person that we spoke to just didn't know, which is, but then probably shouldn't have said anything because we didn't ask. It was just volunteered information. So you almost think, well, actually, maybe just don't say anything.
Yeah. So how are you now? What's going on? What's the latest?
So we have just received on Saturday, actually, so only a couple of days, our initial appointments to go in for blood tests and consent forms to start IVF. So we're hoping that will be in the next few months, I suppose. We got referred pretty much straight afterwards. So that was August time last year. So it's been sort of well over the 6 month mark now that we've been waiting. So
things should move quite quickly from now, shouldn't they?
Hopefully, yeah. That's my understanding of it, is relatively quick once we get to this stage. So fingers crossed it shouldn't be too much longer.
How are you feeling about it all?
Honestly, absolutely terrified, because it's a whole other...
Unknown,
yeah. And a whole other process that, as much as you can find out sort of little bits of information, it's not necessarily the easiest thing to get the sort of nitty-gritty details of. Because it's so individualized, because they base all your drug regimes on your bloods, and they base that on your age and what's going on with that particular person, and you don't necessarily know what each individual person's circumstances are, so we'll just have to see, I guess, and go with it. And considering I'm a nurse, I'm rubbish with needles. I'm absolutely terrified about the injections.
How's Connor with needles? Can he do them?
Oh, he's going to have to. He's been told there's literally no room for negotiation. I was like, you're going to have to, because I absolutely cannot do it. There's no way.
Mm. Oh, gosh. Well, we wish you all the luck with that.
Thanks.
We hope it all goes well. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing your story. So sorry that you've been through such a traumatic time. Like, it must feel now that you've got so much to grieve for and so much to kind of, but the IVF process has started. So, like, make sure you take some time for yourself and time to kind of explore everything and be kind to yourself.
Yeah, we sort of made that sort of 6 month waiting period a bit of a, let's go and do some nice things. So we've been away on holiday and done sort of a few self-care things over the last few months, which I think was probably needed for both of us.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
So I think it's definitely, it's something that we're trying to be better at as a couple, is take time to do a bit of self-care in between and actually look after ourselves a bit better. So that's probably the one thing that I would say has been a bit of a positive from the whole experience, is we've actually probably made a bit more effort to look after ourselves better. So yeah.
Wonderful. Well, keep us posted, won't you? Keep in touch. Let us know how you get on.
I will do. Yeah, absolutely. And just thank you guys so much for everything that you guys do, because it's amazing. And it's something that I stumbled across quite late in our loss journey, I suppose. So it was actually sort of post the first ectopic that someone on my Instagram was like, oh, I follow this page and listen to this podcast. And I was like, oh, I've not heard of this. Because we're quite fortunate, I suppose, in some respects, that none of our friends have been through loss. So, I mean, they're obviously in a really nice position where it's not something they've ever had to deal with. But then also that makes it tricky because you haven't got the same support network. Someone that you know has been in that situation. So, just wanted to say a massive thanks to you guys because you guys are great. And it's been a massive support for me. Like, the podcast is great and it's a really nice thing.
I know that when we were messaging to arrange this recording, Megan, I mentioned about Sharla's episode. You said you'd listen to that one.
Yeah, I went and had a listen, and it's really helpful because I stumbled on it so late. There's no way I could have listened to all the episodes. There's so many. But I sort of picked through, and I hadn't realised that Sharla's one was quite similar in terms of her situation. So that was really helpful.
And of course, Amber Itso, she had both of her tubes removed for a different reason, but was in the same, ultimately in the same situation.
And another incredible person in terms of what she's doing. It's just all this sort of campaigning to make things better for people, which it's nice that there's a scenario where people who've been through like the worst points in their life are able to try and make a difference for someone else who might end up being in the same position or might not end up needing to be in the same position for because of the support of others. So that's a really a lovely thing.
It's about trying to make things look different for someone that comes next, right?
Yeah, exactly. And if you can do that, then that's in my opinion, it's a really positive thing, and it's a great place to be.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. It's lovely to be able to provide that light in someone else's darkness. But thank you for staying. And thank you so much for joining us. And as Laura said, do stay in touch.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been really nice to be able to share.
Good.
Lovely to meet you.
Good. Take care, Megan.
Thanks, guys. Take care.